Welcome back to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and this week we look at how radio handled broadcasting on general election night. What's it like being an editor of a major news event when stories are breaking constantly and it's all happening in the middle of the night? I've chatted to two guests. We'll meet Andrew Alexander, executive producer at Times Radio soon. But first, I spoke to Rosie Seed, who's deputy editor of World at One and PM on BBC Radio 4 and was co-editor of the BBC Radio Election Results Night with Graham McMillan. The coverage was a joint broadcast with Radio 5 and Radio 4, and I asked Rosie to tell me more about how it worked.
Myself and my co-editor, Graham McMillan, we do both all the sort of UK elections and the US elections. And between them, those programmes run on various different ones of the BBC's output. In 2019, which was Emma Barnett and James Naughtie, Five Lives sort of opted in for a five-hour chunk of that. So it's not unheard of. Graham and I were appointed as editors in 2019, actually, but didn't do that general because we hadn't done any of the programmes before then. And since then, they have been co-programmes, as it were, for the locals, but perhaps with different on-air times on different networks. And for the locals, the BBC nations and regions and locals, some of them join at various different points.
Tell me about what goes into planning. How much can you plan for?
I think, interestingly, the planning, the really big planning job of it, which I was very lucky to work with our colleagues in TV for as well, is about where you send people and who you send out. Which counts are you putting on? Where are you going to? How many places are you sending people and how are they getting on air? And someone's got to recce those sites and all that sort of stuff. And I was really lucky that I had a lot of help from our colleagues in TV on that, because in some ways you're trying to send people to all the places that could give you anything from a sort of hung parliament to a landslide. There are places you always go to because they're early and you know you're going to take those early results because they're the ones that tell you whether or not the exit poll is in the right track, to be honest. So that's quite easy. And you know you're going to places like Blythe and to Sunderland and to Swindon, and you're getting really good voices in there. After that, when you've got sort of polls that are as sort of extraordinary as the ones we have, you have to sort of take a choice about where you're going. And we decided in some ways to go quite a lot to personalities. And we were quite well set whatever happened, because you still wanted to know what happened to Rachel Reeves or Jacob Rees-Mogg or the Chancellor and Liz Truss and so on. And similarly, when you're thinking of all the guests you're booking, you know, you're going to want to hear what Neil Kinnock has to say, whether it's a landslide or Labour have squeaked to win or whether it's all still in the balance. So while you're thinking all the time, what's the result going to be? What's the result going to be? In some ways, the big building blocks of it are quite similar, regardless of what you think it might be.
You get the exit poll, 10 o'clock, polls close, exit poll. You can have, like you say, guest book. There is actually quite a lot of time before they're coming in, you know, quickly. And then they do start coming in quickly.
I think one of the key points is making sure that you've got a set of people in the studio who are sort of confident in what you're doing, very well briefed, and the work, you know, index cards at the ready, literally it was like A-level week for Nick and Rachel with their index cards, looking at where they might, yeah. Honestly, try printing on index cards, it takes ages.
It's like doing A-level revision.
It was, and there were points on Tuesday, I was like, oh God, it's A-level week, and have I done enough work or not? I don't know, and I won't know till Friday morning. Really, that was how I felt last week. But I think, you know, as long as you've got the right people in the right places, you can sort of do anything. And I was really lucky with the four people in the studio. Nick and Rachel have now done two locals with each other before. Phil Cowley, who's our sort of sophologist, this is almost his 20th year of doing these elections, so he can just sort of run the show on his own, to be honest. And Henry was just full of enthusiastic and brilliant analysis and, you know, joie de vivre and joy. So that was really lucky, to be honest, and that puts you in a good place. But for me, it's a sort of program of three halves. You've got this sort of few minutes before you go on air, before the exit poll, where you're sort of building this tension. And my co-editor Graham did that brilliantly with sort of, you know, mixed openers and music and careful scripting and building up. Then you get the exit poll and you've got this moment. And we had this joyous moment of Wes Streeting and Stuart Wood both in the studio at the same time, you know, and a moment of real human humanity in that. And then you've got this sort of long period where not much is happening. You don't know whether the exit poll is right. And we sort of stuffed that with guests, to be honest, so that there were lots of people coming in and out and a real sort of feeling of energy. And we had sort of orchestrated moments of sort of Wes Streeting and Mel Stride giving each other advice. Mel Stride talking to Wes about how you go into high office and what you need to do and how you pull that off, and we're sort of countering about what you do when your party's turning in on itself and how you get through that. There were moments like that. So you've got sort of 2 and a bit hours of that, and you get a couple of results in, and you know, no one's surprised at what those results are, but they tell you whether the poll is right. You take every single one of them, even though you know what the answer is. And then you get to a stage where they come so thick and fast, you're there going, do I take this or that? Do we want that speech or this result? Oh, we just need to hear some analysis, actually. So that's when it's just, I mean, I can't remember that period, and I haven't listened back to all of it yet, and I just can't quite remember what happened at 3 in the morning. I do remember a point where it was like, that's Rishi Sunak standing up, but we've just gone into, I think it was Jeremy Hunt's declaration. No, out of Hunt, into Sunak. I mean, those are just instinctive decisions that you make.
That's when it gets really frantic, doesn't it? That's when it becomes a night of constant breaking news. And like you say, at that point, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning and you've been up however many hours. You've started broadcasting at 10. So you're 5 hours into this marathon and then it kicks off. How do you deal with so many stories that are breaking simultaneously? How do you make those judgment calls?
Well, you've thought about quite a lot of it in advance. I had a fantastic team with me. Matthew, who was a studio producer with me, who had also done a lot of work on sort of working out which correspondents were where and how we were going to speak to them. We sat down with a couple of other people, including Sophie, and we kind of did a bronze, silver, gold list. And then we did these are the 10 we absolutely take, whatever. And then, of course, 2 of them came in at the same time. You just make a snap decision. But we had a really sort of, these are the ones we're going to hit, whatever. And apart from a couple of cases where we couldn't get hold of the line because it wasn't coming into the building, we did that. And then instinctively, I think you know which one's right to take if 2 come in at the same time. You obviously take the Prime Minister over the Chancellor.
How many were working on the team overnight?
It's a good question. I mean, there were sort of 4 absolutely key people who were working for sort of a few days ahead of time. And then there were a number of people who came in just for the last couple of days. We have someone who kind of works alongside the TV programme, who feeds all the sort of lines through to us when we're done with TV, or says, can we, you know, grab the lines so that we can do them before TV. And then there's some people sort of chasing guests, and some people making sure the reporters are in the right place and so on. If I'm honest, because I pull this team together in a slightly ad hoc way, it doesn't sort of get rotated or whatever, I'm not quite entirely sure.
Does everybody work the whole shift, or is there a...
Oh, yeah.
Is there a change? Yeah. It's not a changeover at 4 o'clock in the morning or anything like that.
I don't think you'd prize them out of their chairs, to be honest. I mean, I was knackered at 1 a.m. and then I was absolutely up for it at about 1:45, and I probably could have done another 2 hours or something, but I gave way to my esteemed colleagues on the Today programme and on 5 Live Breakfast. And I think the really key thing is making sure that everybody knows exactly what they're doing and who their sort of first line of people to go to. So what you don't end up is everyone trying to do everything, but you end up with people specifically doing specific things like turning around audio and writing kind of scripts or chasing reporters or trying to get that guest or wondering where the guest that was booked to be in the studio at 3 in the morning is and sort of trekking around to try and find them.
How did you feel it went on the night? Now the dust has settled, now we're, you know, had a weekend, and how are you looking back?
Having only listened back to the first half so far, because I had to catch up on being a member of my family over the weekend, really, having been pretty absent recently. Overall, I'm really pleased with it, I think. Our aim in going into it was to be sort of, you know, it's a radio programme. It was sort of, if you're at home on your own or with a couple of friends, or if you're in your car, I wanted that sort of feeling of, this is the election party you would like to be at. This is a group of people with lots of interesting people coming out. They're all enjoying themselves. You're learning a lot, but no one's trying to be too smart. And there are lots of human moments, and there's lots of sort of moments of news drama. And I think we achieved most of that. I thought it went Well,
what have you learned for next time? Is there anything you'd do differently?
There's a very boring thing of front loading the staffing, actually. I kind of, you know, I had a great team come together for the last 3 days, but what I needed was more help early on, which I managed to get after a while. But that's, it's interesting. I sort of thought the last week would be the really busy week because I haven't done a general before. And just there is a phenomenal amount of stuff that needs doing ahead of time. So front load your production schedule a bit. I don't think you can listen back to previous years enough, actually, to work out what you want to do more of and what you would want to do differently. I think we could have had more sort of just very quick one, which I did try to build in, but it sort of disappeared over the night. And, you know, I should have concentrated on it harder. You know, what is the tally? There was a point at which I think three Conservative MPs losing their seats every minute. And I'm not sure we ever said that on air, although I haven't, as I say, listened back to the three till four bit yet, but I don't know. So a sense of just a little bit more of here are the facts of what's going on. And you get slightly lost with the people who are in front of you and trying to sort of choreograph a studio without necessarily occasionally just sort of stepping back and going, what isn't in this hour that should be, rather than how am I going to get this hour right? You just kind of, what am I not doing that I should be, I think is something that editors of these programmes, or certainly I, should have asked myself a bit more often.
And you have to remember it's three, four o'clock
and you've got all these people pushing to say, yeah, this is the right thing, put me on air, this, we've got this great guest from over here, and they are great guests, but maybe they're not the right guest, and maybe you need to work out what that right guest is.
How did you keep the energy up for that length of time during the night, yourself and the team? I mean, I saw all various sorts of people were running on sweets, and
I think a lot of it is always adrenaline, to be honest. I really do think it is. I try not to get too involved in the sweets because then I sort of crash and feel a bit sick. So I go in quite hard on the mixed nuts.
Very good.
And coffee and Diet Coke.
A big thank you to Rosie Seed for that insight into what it's like on election night. And I particularly loved her honesty and thoughts on what she's learned for next time. Next, I spoke to Andrew Alexander, executive producer of the weekday 10 till 1 show on Times Radio, producer of their podcast How to Win an Election, and Times Radio's election night editor. I asked Andrew to tell me about what goes into planning an election night broadcast that is that long and that unpredictable.
I suppose luckily, actually, I'm not sure it was that unpredictable this time around, but maybe I'll come on to that. I mean, it's been quite a different experience for me because I've worked in big broadcasters before for BBC. And so this is my first general election at Times Radio. In fact, it's Times Radio's first general election. So we're working with very small teams here. You know, we're a small and kind of lean outfit. We don't have a lot of people dedicated to planning most of the time. Our teams have really kind of planned the election over the last sort of few months alongside everything else they've done. You know, in my case, my team getting out a 3-hour radio show every day plus a podcast. It's a lot of hours. And I suppose mostly actually it's initially it's sort of logistical hours, like it's planning the, I think we had, which for us is a lot. I think we had 11 presenters, reporters at counts around the country. You know, we were on from 10 till 6. You know, we had live guests throughout the country. It was a big logistical challenge for a small team and you know, a relatively new broadcaster to take on.
How many were working overnight? How big was the team?
So there was, how many producers do we have working on it? So I was editing, and then I had a team of 5 producers, assistant producers. And then we had, as I said, I think we had 11 reporters or Times Radio presenters, people like Jane Garvey and Fee Glover, John Pienaar, all those people out at different counts. So, you know, we had producers with them. We committed quite early on to visualize the whole the night. And Times Radio isn't visualized. I mean, we do visualize everything because we publish on social media, but we had a live stream of the election program on YouTube and also on the Times website. And that added quite a lot of extra complexity to it because it meant that everybody we sent out to the location, we had to get them in vision. So that either meant sending a camera operator with them or showing the producers how to operate, you know, the technology on their iPhones, which is what we mostly work with instead. And we produced something which looked really great.
How much could you plan for beforehand, before the night? How did you decide which counts to go to?
We worked with a guy called David Cowling, who used to be the BBC elections kind of analysis guy. And we spent quite a lot of time thinking about, you know, where are the stories of the night? And we tried to make sure we had people to tell, you know, what we thought were going to be the dominant stories. Luckily, because the polls were pointing in such a clear direction, it was fairly obvious that one of the big stories of the night would be high-profile Tories losing their seats. So it made sense to have people at Jeremy Hunt's account. We also worked with the Times, as we always do, and we used some of their reporters who were at different locations. Like the Times had a reporter at Liz Fuss's account that we didn't. So we sort of had we kind of clear that, you know, the stories were going to be about the Tories' losses. The stories were clearly also about the rise of reform and how we reflect this kind of historic result for the Labour Party. We probably a month out decided that those were going to be where we should put our resources in terms of stories.
On the night, you get that exit poll at 10 o'clock. Then there's the race to be the first to declare. And then there's quite a wait. There's quite a lull. And then they all start coming in. How do you deal with that before you get a constant stream of news? What do you prepare? Obviously, guests, reaction to the exit poll. But I always think that's the sticky point of election night until stuff really starts to get going.
We've basically dealt with that by putting all of our big beasts at the top of the show. So, you know, we're lucky enough to have a lot of amazing commentators and kind of senior figures who work for the Times or Times Radio. And so, you know, so that, yeah, you're right. Like 10 to basically to the two is essentially reacted to the exit poll. We had William Hague, we had Andrew Neil, we had a lot of the sort of big beasts of the tea come on and give us their sort of analysis of if this is true, this is what it means. So we stacked a lot of those people towards the top of the show. You know, we also managed to get around all the political parties. And then when it gets into the sort of thick of the results, then a lot of those external guests, kind of, you have a lot less room for those. It becomes much more about trying to chase the story. Luckily, we had a brilliant team in the studio of Matt and Kate McCann, Callum McDonald and James Johnson, the pollster. So we were able to, you know, every time an extraordinary result came through, we had the right people there to sort of tell us what it meant. And we had great producers out in the field who were, as well as getting out their reporters on air, they were finding great guests for us. So we had Jacob Rees-Mogg on quite soon, shortly before he lost his seat because of a hardworking producer and who was at his count. There's a definite period at the beginning of the night, which is for the sort of grand thoughts about what this exit poll might mean. And then there's the sort of absolute thick of it where the results are coming in, which was great fun, although quite challenging for us because we are a relatively small station with a small studio. We had to sort of really push the technology to the absolute limits to be able to take in as many feeds and reporters from around the country. And I think we sort of held our own against your BBCs and your Skies in that respect.
Once you get into the nuts and bolts of it, it is a night of constant breaking news. How do you deal with that? When stories are breaking simultaneously, what kind of quick decisions did you have to make on the night?
For the listeners at home, hearing the declarations is quite an important part of the experience. And that's quite hard to judge because they all really do come at the same time. And so we had a system of trying to prioritise, this is the count that matters, this is the declaration that matters, this is the result that matters the most now. Balancing that with, well, we can turn some of them round, but some of them we're just going to have to miss. So I'd say that was actually the hardest part, was deciding what to go to live. You know, given you can't do it all, that's probably the hardest part of the night.
Just as that is happening, it's around sort of 3 o'clock in the morning. You've been working on air and beforehand, but on air since 10, so 5 hours. How do you keep the energy up for that length of time during the night for yourself and the team? Were there lulls? Were you on the Haribo and the coffee?
Actually, most people were not eating Haribo this time. We had a lot of cups of tea brought to us by our brilliant runners. Matt got annoyed everyone, all the other presenters, by eating some cooked chicken. Actually, there's no point at which there was a lull. I think the first hour felt like it went on for days, and almost all at the same time felt like it was gone in an instant. And then, but you know, that was something we'd rehearsed. We'd kind of carefully thought about, so you knew where you were. After midnight, to be honest, it became much looser. The adrenaline really started flowing. I think when we went on air, there was a lot of nerves. And then, you know, an hour in, the nerves have been replaced by the adrenaline of the story. And everybody working on it loves politics. They love covering politics. They think it's a privilege to watch those results come in. You know, we're all politics nuts. We'd all be watching or listening to it at home if we weren't working on it. In fact, we'd all be desperately disappointed if we couldn't work on an election night program. So no, actually there was no lull really. I mean, there was a slightly harder for us. So the next day we came there at 6, but we came back on air with Matt at 10 a.m. and did another 3 hours. That was quite hard picking ourselves up in the morning. getting back to it, the adrenaline always takes you there in the end.
It just carries you through, doesn't it? Kind of don't even notice the time, do you?
We had to be quite careful about building in breaks, just moments where the presenters could take a breath, because it's a very intense experience for them. You know, they all have like three screens in front of them. We had a 3-minute bulletin at the top of the hour, a 2-minute bulletin at 1:30. That's not very much in terms of a break. We didn't carry ads overnight. So they were really relentless. So we tried to come up with ways to let some of them out and just go and take a moment to sort of restabilize themselves. You know, I think also it's very hard when you're in the midst of it. I think we're all conscious that it's sort of your fear is that you're missing the big picture because you're getting wrapped up in individual contests that interests you for certain reasons. You know, it's fascinating that Leicester East has been won by the Tories or whatever, but it's you sort of have to keep trying to refocus on, are we at the top of every hour? Are we resetting? Are we telling the listeners the story? This is the overall story, as well as sort of, you know, diving into the individual details.
How do you feel it went on the night? Now we're a few days away from it. We've had a weekend. You can look back on it. How do you feel it went?
I'm really pleased with how it went. I'm just very proud of the team. We've had so much lovely praise and from listeners. I think what they really appreciated was that we did everything you want from an election-like programme, which is kind of bring you the drama and the results and the serious analysis. But we also had a lot of fun. You know, we had a live brass band that was taking requests through the night. We had a brilliant listener called Heidi, who was knitting a scarf in the colours of the seats of the Commons. We actually just had her back on the show today, and she's shown us the final scarf. It's massive. It's obviously mostly red with a few other colours. We had fun, and I think the listeners really appreciated having another option that still gave you everything you need to know, but also didn't take itself too seriously.
Have you learned anything for next time? Is anything you'd do differently?
That's a good question. I mean, I'd build a bigger studio. We had 5 people in the studio all night, and that we have quite a small radio studio. So that'd be my main request if we had to do it again.
Thank you to Andrew for his insight on how Times Radio did election night and making those big decisions. Lots to tell you this week. Summer socials have begun. In the diary already, we've got Bristol on the 11th, London on the 17th, Exeter on the 18th, and Leeds on the 23rd of July. Keep an eye out on the website for others across the country. You'll find details at radioacademy.org/events. That's also the page you need to get a ticket for the Radio Academy Festival on the 18th of September. There's 10 weeks to go, and we have announced our theme, Impact Amplified. I'll have more exciting news for you over the summer about bursaries and guest speakers. And if you missed it, applications are now open for the Real World Radio Academy 30 Under 30. The deadline is the 15th of August, and this year it's not just filling in forms. We're pleased to accept a video or an audio upload, maximum length 3 minutes, to answer the application questions instead of a written response, if that's what you'd prefer. I'll see you next week.